The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
This is the UAB Director's Chair. We call it that because he's the athletic director for, of course, your UAB Blazers. Mark Ingram joined us this week. Mark, how you doing, brother? What's going on?
Hey, I'm doing great. How are you today?
I'm doing fantastic. We've been doing, certainly talk about a lot of UAB. We talk about a lot of college stuff. And I love having the athletic director. I love coaches, too, but they do a lot of X's and O's and stuff like that. You get to actually pull the curtain back from what happens inside of college athletics, and I love that, and I appreciate you coming on and sharing those things with us every single week. And then something you actually started about 4 or 5 weeks ago. You want to talk about some classic rock today. We're going to dive in.
Don't blame me. This is on you.
So today I thought we'd go pretty deep. We're going to talk about the four songs that most directly influenced your life. Now, I will tell you this right now. My list has changed not only from day to day, but from like hour to hour. If I can only pick four, because when I start going through songs, start thinking about things that changed my life. Maybe it was the first song that you kissed a girl to. Maybe it was your wedding song. Maybe it was a song you heard on the way to a funeral. Whatever you want to pick, it's your show. So you get to pick those four songs. I know how hard that is. We may have to make a couple weeks out of this, but we'll get into that as well. Let's start with UAB Athletics, UABSports.com. Great site to check out. You know, it's weird because I check out the site every day, and every day it looks like everybody's winning everything for the UAB Athletic Department right now. What's going on?
Partner, we have got a lot going on. We're finishing up baseball and softball season. Our softball team is currently tied for second place in Conference USA. They've got UTEP in town this weekend for our last home series before they go on the road to Charlotte, who's number one in the league. So that'll be a tough one. But if we could find a way to win this series and steal one or two from Charlotte as well next week, we're going to be in a great position going into the conference softball tournament. So that's exciting under our first year head coach, AJ Daugherty, who's just done an awesome job with our team. You know, in your first year, you kind of pick up what you got, and it's as the old adage says, you play the hand you're dealt. And so whether it's not necessarily always about players' ability, but the ability matched with the style of play of the coach. So, you know, you could have great players, but if they don't match the style of the coach, well then, you know, you got a great football team that runs the football really well, and then you hire a coach who wants to throw it like Mike Leach did. You know, You got a problem. And so he's just done a terrific job blending those two things together with his style and their abilities and trying to make the most out of it. We're wrapping up baseball season as well. Casey Dunn, who I love and is going to continue doing a great job as he builds that team the way he wants it to be to really have the offensive productivity that he likes matched up with our ability to pitch and strike guys out. So he's had some notable wins this year against teams like Alabama and swept Jacksonville State and beat Auburn at Regions Field. So we show some real signs of life and good things for the future. And as a matter of fact, your UAB Blazer beach volleyball team just beat number 12 Florida International. Just beat number 12 Florida International in the beach conference beach championship and moving on to the semifinals. So really, really happy with that for them. That's their second top 20 victory this season. And they're already having a record setting season with number wins. That makes win number 17, which is the most in school history. So that's exciting for them.
Dude, whenever you win beach volleyball and you're doing it against a team that has beaches all over it, like Florida, that's pretty impressive, right? I mean, Alabama's got their share too, but yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
This is the UAB Director's Chair. He's Mark Ingram. You can get in touch with him through Twitter at UAB_AD. And of course, the show you can hear at least 5 days a week here on the TKR app. Continue to download that TKR app. People are still picking it up. We have over 14 shows now. We have hundreds of thousands of listeners every single week. And our podcasts are going through the roof too. The Tony Curry Radio Podcast Network. That's Curry with a K, K-U-R-R-E. We're available in every major industry. Just pull up UAB Director's Chair or Tony Curry Radio Podcast. You can listen to our shows. And our show right here is got four of the top 10 spots over the last month. So people, the UAB Blazers are loving this show. We'll talk about these songs that most influence you. I do want to get into one question here before we get into some emails. We used to, you mentioned your softball coach. When you go into a situation and your cupboard is bare or whatever you have you're dealing with until you can bring in some of your own recruits, a lot of people, and I'm thinking more college football than anything, they bring in JUCO players, right? They bring in positions maybe 1 or 2 years to fill some of those spots. And now with the transfer portal, it's a little different. Can you talk about just the differences between JUCO players and transfer portal? Is it one and the same? How does that work?
Yeah, it's not the same. Great question. You know, the transfer portal combined with the ability to play immediately. Some sports you already could play immediately when you transferred. Others, like football and basketball, you had to, what they would say, you had to sit out a year in residency, meaning you could transfer, but you could not play for a year. And what that did, Tony, the value in that, and we've gone away from it, which I think is a mistake, but the value in it, it prevented emotional decisions. And it really helped to prevent tampering. Now what you've got is a coach at school A needs a certain position because somebody's not as good as they thought on their roster or transferred out or went pro or quit or got hurt or whatever they did. Mm-hmm. And now they've got a hole in their roster. And so at the end of the spring, they go, I remember old Tony Curry. We'd like to have him. He's starting at school B. Yeah. He's better than the backups I've got here at school A. You know what? I'm going to let his high school coach know. I'm going to let his high school teammate know. They'll go to some person as an intermediary to let you know, hey, man, if you'll get in the portal, we can talk to you. We think you can play here. And it's basically untraceable. You know, the NCAA would happily enforce that, but they can't go on, I heard that he said that she said that, you know, you can't go on that. Got to have some factual information and like a text exchange that's screenshot. Like you can't trace it practically. And so, you know, now layer in pay for play collectives where they can say, not only do we think, Tony, you could start here, but we'll pay you this much money to come here and do it.
Yeah. You know,
and so it's really hard. Now, junior college kids who still can get paid from a pay for play collective, the junior college kids, they're being recruited like high school guys, but they don't have to get into the transfer portal to do it.
Okay. This is really interesting. We have a question here from Donnie in Southside. Said he loves. Says he loves the show. Loves hearing Mark every single week here on TKR. He wants you to talk about the UAB local exchange, how it works. Does every college have one? Is there a budget? Do you set a budget for these collectives? And if in fact you do, who sets that budget? Can anybody be a collective? And can you have more than one collective for a university? A lot to unload here.
Yeah, there's a lot there. So. Great question, Donnie. You have two separate things. You have what I would call authentic NIL, name, image, likeness. That is where you says we want Tony Curry to be to endorse our brand like Patrick Mahomes does for State Farm. Mm-hmm. And we're going to pay Tony Curry to be on our billboards or commercials, or if it's Tony's got a massive social media following, he's going to make social media posts. However, whatever it is that Tony's going to do to endorse your company, that is authentic name, image, and like the use of a name, image, and likeness. That's what it was designed to permit. Well, immediately, as we often do, we got really creative, those of us out in the coaching and athletics world, and we started creating these fake businesses called collectives, which I enjoy calling pay-for-play collectives, because I want to reiterate to Congress or anybody that'll listen that is what they are. Yep. And if anybody is suggesting that they're not, it's ridiculous. And my peers who go, well, yeah, but our guys have to, if they get paid, they have to go do an hour of community service. Well, I'd be embarrassed to say that out loud. I thought community service was about service.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Maybe I'm crazy, Tony. Mm-hmm. I thought volunteerism and service work was about giving back. My bad.
Yeah.
I guess that's me. I'm the old fuddy-duddy here, but you know, that's what they're supposed to be. So, and by the way, you can't pay somebody, you know, is it reasonable to say, well, we're going to pay them $10,000 because they put out a tweet every week?
Yeah.
Well, that's that, well, there's no real market value in that. It's unfair. And yet we're not using any established, you know, market values for these student athletes yet, like we do in the pros. So the other question you ask, so you've got authentic NIL, and that's the UAB local exchange. If you're a business and you want to help and you want to feed one of our players every week, and in exchange that player does something for you, signs autographs for an hour at your business once a month, or they put out social media posts, or they're on your billboard, you can do that through the UAB local exchange. That is separate from collectives. Our collective is called Southside Solutions. You can give to that. We don't, you know, we might set a goal for the, you know, for them to say, hey, we'd like to get this much money in our pay for play collective this year. And if you were interested in doing that, you can give them the money and it be directed to any sport you want. You know, if you just were really passionate about soccer and we want to get the number one goalkeeper in the country and I want to have it and I'm going to put this much money in the collective and I want it to be directed there, we can do that.
Okay.
You know, primarily right now it's funding men's basketball and football players. But as I told our coaches a year ago when it got established, you know, those are just the two sports that are kind of driving the interest and the conversation today. But we're not far away from it being true in baseball and then softball and then women's basketball and then volleyball. It's coming.
Mark, this sounds like a nightmare. Listen, I mean, we'll go back to let's go back to before we had NIL. Yeah, we had boosters, right? We had boosters, and boosters owned companies, and they owned insurance companies and tire rim places, and we know what happened there, right? So whenever you have somebody, I'm assuming it's almost, is it a non for profit or collectives non for profits?
No.
Okay.
No, they're not. They're generally set up as LLCs. Now there are some that are starting to set themselves up as a 501c3, and it, you want to talk about getting complicated on how they determine themselves to be a charity. It's that you give to the collective pays the player, and then the player goes and does charity work.
Yeah.
So I guess that makes it all legal from an IRS perspective. It makes it legal. I guess you just got to ask yourself, you know, where do you draw a line on what you think is like ethically and morally okay?
Well,
like,
you also have to have a board if you're going to have a non-for-profit too.
And I'm not trying to grandstand here, right? No. I'm not trying to say like, oh, I'm holier than thou, and I just don't think it's right. But man, I just don't think it's right.
No, but how does that?
Because that doesn't mean it makes me sick.
As an athletic director, I don't think people realize a lot of people believe that these rogue boosters in the past were the ones that would go after the coaches, and the coaches are pretty much out of that now. They go after the athletic directors, right? And so, I know that when you walk through Bartow Arena or you go through Protective Stadium, you're shaking hands. And I know you're shaking hands with some of your biggest boosters, some of your biggest supporters and people that love UAB athletics. And I get that. But when you do have someone walk in and saying, listen, I'm going to give you this if you do this, that creates a lot of chaos, does it not?
Well, we've had people come in and say, hey, I'd like to make a gift and you're going to put a swimming pool in the outfield of your baseball stadium. Well, I appreciate that and that you want to do that. But if that's not part of our plan, we're just unfortunately going to have to pass on that opportunity, you know? And so we've had that before, not as much. I haven't had as much of that here as I've had at some other places, but you get it a little bit, you know, And what you'd like to do in that situation is say, hey, I love your passion. I love what you're trying to get at. Let me tell you what we see as our key issues. Is there a way we could meet in the middle?
Yeah.
Maybe we could do a little bit of what you want.
Like start with a swimming pool at my house first. And then,
right. And then, let's do that. But you just try to work with them there. So we've had people before say, hey, I want to give you property, or I want to give you a vehicle. I'm going to give you this green limousine. Well, that's awesome, man. And it's valued at $50,000 or $100,000, whatever. Man, that's awesome. But I just don't have anywhere to park that limousine.
Yeah.
And I don't even know what I would go and do with that thing.
Has that actually happened?
Yeah. And so, thank you. But unfortunately, we're going to decline.
I think you and I need to take a ride. Yeah, we should take a ride now. That sounds fun. That'd be kind of cool.
Yeah. You occasionally get that. When I worked at Missouri, we used to accept, this is so hilarious. We used to accept gifts of livestock. So there were these four major state fairs around the state of Missouri. I'm sure they still have them, where they had like cattle auctions and livestock auctions. And we would go and we would receive, not only would people there say, hey, I want to buy this cow. And then what they want to do is donate it to our training table. And they would have it processed, and we would get the, you know, we'd get the beef from that gift.
Yeah.
But there was one fair in particular where we had to take a trailer, and we would have to load those animals into the trailer and take it to the plant to be processed.
Yeah.
And I just want you to picture me, not farm. I'm not a farmer. I can do some stuff, but I don't know what I'm doing. And I'm trying to push, a 900 pound cow or whatever. I don't know what they weigh, a million pound cow into a trailer. And then I got chickens. I'm holding the feet of a chicken, and the wings are flapping around, and I'm stuffing it in the back seat of the car. And I mean, it's like a movie, like comedy of errors. Like, you know, it was nutty. And you're driving down, we were Ross Bjork, and who's the AD at Texas A&M, tells an awesome story of him and Laird Veach, who's now the AD at Memphis. We all worked together there at Missouri, and the two of them were driving, and they were going over this little tiny little bridge, and they knocked the mirror off the truck because they were trying to go through this narrow bridge with this gigantic trailer with this all these animals in the back. Oh, you know, it's
hilarious.
It's a wild deal, man. That is... Now, unfortunately, we're not doing that here at UAP. But
yeah.
We get into some stuff.
I bet you do. He's the athletic director for your UAB Blazers. It's called the UAB Director's Chair. We do it every single week. It runs at least five times in the TKR app. Thanks to the 100,000 folks who download that app, and of course available wherever you get your podcast at Tony Curry Radio Podcast, or just look up UAB Director's Chair and you'll find it. We'll get into our four songs that most influenced Mark in my life coming up here in a second. One other email is very interesting. Holly in Hamilton wants to know, Mark, loved the show. How do you decide which athletic events you go to? I know you probably try to go to as many as possible, but how do you decide which ones to go to? And do your student athletes know that when you're there, and how special is that to have your AD at one of your events?
Yeah, well, good old Holly, thank you very much. You know, you try to go to as much as you can go to is the answer. The challenge for me is a lot of times those events, my UAB events, are on the same day, and I have four kids, and I'm also occasionally I try to be a dad. Yeah. And so, you know, there might be, you know, Friday night, a baseball game, a UAB baseball game, but my son has a baseball game and I haven't seen him in a week. So I'm going to try to go to his game, which means I miss the UAB game, which means, you know, I can't support my student athletes. But you can't be everywhere, right?
Yeah.
You can't be everywhere all the time, which I think the student athletes know. I try my best when I am at an event. I don't always do it because that's not why I'm going. I'm going because I want to watch the game.
Yeah.
But I try to, you know, if I can, I'd like them to know I'm there. So I wander down to the dugout, or I wander down to the edge of the, you know, field, or maybe after the game I'm on the field so the players see me. And I'm not trying to do anything other than let them know I was there because I care about them.
Yeah.
And but you just can't be everywhere. You can't. I've tried to do that, but you can't. And so, you know, when you look at how many, like the volume of, particularly this time of year, like the volume of baseball and softball games, it is a lot.
Yeah.
And you just can't do it all, man. But, you know, like I said, you try to do as many as you can. And I think they appreciate it. You know, they usually oftentimes will say, thank you for coming, or the coach will. Hey, I really appreciate you being here. It means a lot. And, you know, we only have, I mentioned beach volleyball earlier. We only have two home beach events a year. We only have one outdoor track event every year. We only have one indoor track event. And then we have been hosting at the Birmingham Crossplex the indoor conference championship. Well, that doesn't give you a lot of opportunities. And so sometimes you can go, and then sometimes you got to say, I got that, or I got my own child's something, you know, or I'm out of town because, you know, men's basketball's in the NIT and I missed the outdoor track meet because I was in Las Vegas at the NIT, you know, could be, and I don't know if that's an exact example, but it could be something like that, you know, and you're trying to wear two hats in two different places, which is impossible.
You're a busy man, and I know whenever I usually see you, certainly at basketball games, you usually have the entire family with you, which I think is super, super cool. He's Mark Ingram, UAB underscore AD, if you want to follow him on Twitter. He joined us for the UAB Director's Chair every single week. All right, let's get into some music. We've been doing best bass players, best guitar players, best front man. We've been doing our Mount Rushmore thing. I came up with this a wise old idea to come up with four songs that most influenced your life. I don't know if you could actually come up with just four, because every day I think about something, yeah. Another song comes in and boots one out. And I don't even know if we want to have honorable mentions here, because we could go on and on and on. But four did kind of stick in my brain right off the bat, and I know you probably have four. So give me your first song that most influenced your life. And it doesn't have to be a classic rock song, just a song in general.
Well, and you know, the influence your life piece is maybe a stronger way than I'd put it, but just some things that were really meaningful to me. So I did not grow up in the 50s and 60s, and I wasn't born until the early 70s, but my dad was in the radio business, and so I grew up around a lot of different music, particularly the music that he and my mom liked, which was oldies music. And what I used to call oldies, right? That was Temptations, Elvis, Beach Boys, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And loved it, and felt like there was a point probably in high school I could, you put on one of those stations, I could sing every word of every song.
Yeah.
The song American Pie by Don McLean,
oh, yeah,
is this great sort of anthem about American history and musical history that I just loved. And I loved how, it's like 11 minutes long or something. And I loved that about it, because, particularly back then, but even today, people would tell you in the record business, you can't have a song more than 3 minutes. It's anything longer than 2.5, 3 minutes, you lose the audience. And that song is just awesome. And I loved learning about what everything meant.
Yeah.
I've kind of gone through and read about the day the music died, and what did that mean when the airplane crashed with the Big Bopper and Richie Valens and Buddy Holly. I mean, I just thought that song was fascinating. I loved that song, and it just made me, that one song kind of reminds me of all these other oldies songs that I grew up just loving as a kid.
Yeah, and there's actually a documentary that came out a few months ago called The Day the Music Died, American Pie, and it's an entire movie about that particular song, which is amazing. Great first song. I'm going to go the first one, and for some reason it was the first one that came to mind. I was 10 years old. We used to have a little bit of a park. It was about a half mile around. We used to ride our bicycles. I had a transistor radio. I used to listen to Marty and Joe on the radio. I listened to Cincinnati Reds baseball. That's all we did, is ride our bikes and have a great time. And then I would meander down towards the end of the street, which is a little further away, and there was a girl named Laura Bush who was actually in my class. I guess I was, in fifth grade or something like that. Anyway. So we would go down to her house, and we'd ride in her driveway and stuff. And she invited me in her house one afternoon after school.
I don't know where this is going.
Yeah, and so I got in there. So she's in there with her best friend, Nanette Dolby. I'll never forget her. And then I was with a friend of mine, Steve Bealey. And the four of us sat down, and I walk in the living room, and there's a bottle in the middle of the floor. And I had no clue. I had no clue what that bottle was. And she's like, have you ever played Spin the Bottle? And I was like, no, I was 10. I was a late bloomer, my friend. And I was like, no, I haven't. She goes, well, you spin this bottle, and whoever it's pointing on, you got to kiss that person. Well, I was absolutely freaking out. And on the radio, playing at that time, the first time I ever kissed a girl, the only time I remember at the age of 10, was Babe from Styx. Every time I hear that song, it makes me pepper up. I don't know why, but it was the first time that I actually kissed a girl. So I'm going to go with Babe from Styx. For some reason, that song influences my life. It gets better. What's your second song?
Well, my second one, about the same age as you're talking about, I was probably 10-ish and maybe 12. And coming back to all this old music I had been kind of raised with, then I'm at my best friend's house, and he has got this album called Van Halen 1984. Mm. And when I heard the song Jump, I just remember thinking, what is this? what is this? And I heard, you know, we've talked so much about Eddie and Alex Van Halen and David Lee Roth, and they were on our list of great frontmen and great drummers and great guitarists, the Mount Rushmores. And I just remember thinking, like, my whole world was changed in terms of what music was, what it could be. It was thrilling to hear. Really, that whole album is fantastic. And I can remember being in his driveway. He had this old, boombox thing. And we'd be out probably riding our bikes around in circles and circles and circles over and over again. And I could just hear this, we play this tape. We had cassette tape. We would just play it over and over and over and over again. And I could be there yesterday. I remember the house. I remember, my broken down green 10 speed and his little, dirt bike, Kuwahara dirt bike. And I could see it tomorrow like it was yesterday, man. But I've loved that band since that day. So anyway, that's number two.
We're going to our top four most influential songs, or at least songs that come to our mind right at the top of our head. And number two song is great there from Mark Ingram. This is the UAB director's chair. All right. So I had an older brother. He's about 7 years older than I am. And he was into classic rock. We got into the Beatles a lot. He listened to Pink Floyd. And I remember the first time I heard that They Only Come Out at Night from the Edgar Winter Group. He played Frankenstein for me. And I was like, whoa, what is this? And I remember hearing Styx and all these classic rock bands. Diary of a Madman was another one of those things. My dad made him get rid of the album just because of the front of the cover from Diary. He's like, that will not be in our house. My brother was the one that, hid the Playboys in the bottom drawer of his chest when I was in the same.
You got album. A much better list.
There was one song, I had a stereo, and it was my pride and joy. It was a Kenwood. It had two brown speakers. They were maybe 6 inches wide. They were about a foot tall. And I used to put one on either side of my face and turn that thing up as loud as it possibly could go. And I remember listening to a local radio station in Cincinnati. You know it well, WEBN. And I remember the first time I heard AC/DC's Let There Be Rock. I don't know why they played it. It wasn't a hit. But I remember that song was the only word I can describe it as it's unrelentless. It's just in your face. It's so loud. It's so brash. It's so good. It's so loud, and it just does not let up. And I remember the first time I heard it, I was like, whoa. I mean, it changed my life. I mean, normally you got to hear a song 6 or 7 times before you start to like it. I remember hearing that song and I thought, what in the world is this? And from that point on, man, I was a huge AC/DC fan. I couldn't get enough of their music. I didn't realize that they had like 3 or 4 of their albums out. And I was just grabbing all of it as quickly as I possibly could. It was unbelievable. When a band comes out with a new album, you listen to all their material in the past. That's one thing. But when you realize like the 5th or 6th album in that you love something, and you get, it's like binge watching, right? You're like, I love this show. They have 5 of the episodes there, or they have 5 of the seasons, and all of a sudden you're binging it. I was binging it. I loved it. So that's my second song. What's your third song?
Well, and I know what you're saying that about you didn't know they had other albums. That was me and Van Halen. I was like, wait a minute, they've got other stuff.
Oh yeah.
They're not brand new. I thought these guys were brand new, but I was just so young. I just didn't know any better. My next two songs are pretty sappy. These are sappy. My wife does not listen to this show. And the reason she does not listen to this show is because, in her words, I hear you enough. and so, touche, I get that. But on the off chance that she hears this, I decided I would include my wedding song, which is Wonderful World by Louis Armstrong. Nice. I always loved that song.
Nice.
His voice is so great. Mm-hmm. That raspy, deep, rough voice. And that was our wedding song when my beautiful bride Amy and I got married.
That's beautiful.
Wonderful World by Louis Armstrong. Our wedding reception was the best party that I've maybe ever been to. Certainly one of.
And don't
and
feel.
So it also reminds me of that great time.
Don't feel bad because I don't think my ex ever listened to me in 20 years of being on the radio. Maybe when we first started recording each other, she probably listened towards the end. She had enough. That's great. I'm gonna go sappy too. And I don't want to get into it too much, but I went through a divorce about 3 years ago. It's the worst thing that a person can go through. It was horrible. I'm coming out the other side. The light's always getting brighter at the end of the tunnel. But there were a lot of things going on with our kids. And this past Christmas, I got my kids on Christmas Day, and I remember driving in. Everything was great. I had money in the bank. The gifts were bought. Santa Claus is coming. My kids were coming over, and I heard Johnny Mathis's Silver Bells, and I had never heard that. I listened to a lot of Christmas music, but I had not heard his version. I'm a huge Johnny Mathis fan, and I couldn't understand why I hadn't heard it. Maybe I had heard it in the past, but it just didn't mean as much to me. And it was one of the most beautiful Christmas songs I've ever heard. And I still listen to it. I listened to it last week, and it's April. But it's just a beautiful song. It's just different. It's got this little timpani thing that goes off. If you've never heard it, it's just a beautiful rendition of Silver Bells. And that's probably one of my all-time greatest songs right there. All right, what is your final song?
Well, and you just brought something up, and it's probably not good for the month of April or May, but our all-time favorite Christmas songs might need to be something that hits us at some point. But right, you like that? That's because I know one of yours already. Okay, so the last one. So I have four kids, and our oldest is finishing his junior year at the Naval Academy. Well, and so when you go to the academy for the first time. You've been accepted. You've been offered an appointment. You accepted the appointment. Okay, so you're going to be a freshman, which they call a plebe, mm-hmm. and you've got to go to plebe summer. Well, plebe summer is like think boot camp. It's six or eight weeks of boot camp. And what happens is you go to the gates of the academy. And by the way, you know, we play at Navy in football this fall. Yeah. And any of our fans, if you're looking for a cool trip, it is a cool trip. We're playing the Naval Academy on Veterans Day. How about that? In Annapolis. It's going to be awesome. And I've been to a lot of college towns. I don't know that I could say there's no offense to everywhere I've worked and all my beloved Blazers, but it's pretty awesome. That college town is pretty awesome. Anyway, so you got to picture this beautiful campus and these giant walls. You walk through the gates, and you check in, and you're given a time to check in. You're given a time to be there. And so his time to be there to check in was 8 a.m. And all you don't go in with your kid now. Mm-hmm. You know, you kiss him goodbye and good luck, and it's pretty emotional. You're super proud. You're sending your child off to college. They moved out of your house. There's all that stuff layered in there, right? Well, it just so happens. So his time was 8 a.m. when we dropped him off 3 years ago. Well, as it turns out, every single day at the Naval Academy at 8 a.m., they play the national anthem.
Yeah.
And as you might guess, no surprise, everybody is at complete attention when that happens. Mm-hmm. Well, his check-in time that he would walk in is 8 a.m. Well, they naturally at 8 o'clock, they're going to be to the second on time, but the national anthem plays. So rather than escorting his group of about 15 guys in, or there may have been a young lady or two in there, but 15 plebes in, they stand at attention for the national anthem. Wow. And so we're all standing there, the parents. I'm trying to set the scene at this gate, all these parents and family, you know, 50 or 100 of us, and these 15 or 20 soon to be freshmen, plebes, midshipmen. And we're outside the gates and the flags and all this. And it's a beautiful day and first day of June. And they play the national anthem. And as soon as it's over, an upperclassman turns and says to the students, our son and the others, attention, follow me. And they go. And so, but I cannot, at least I don't want to act like I'm more patriotic than anybody else. I'm sure that's not true. I've always considered myself to be fairly patriotic and love our country and those kind of things. But I cannot hear that song, the national anthem, without thinking of that moment and the pride that we have.
That is a great
national
story.
National anthem is number four.
That's a great, and that should have been our last story. That's a great story. Wonderful story. All right, so you know, I was a Catholic. I still am a Catholic, and so I got really. I have not changed yet. So we had a youth group at our church up at St. John's up in Westchester, Ohio, and I was heavily involved in that. We had a youth group and, of course, a softball team, the whole nine yards, and so. And those people influenced my life so much. And so we used to do these things called search weekends where we go down to like St. Francis or St. Joseph's or St. Mary's, wherever downtown. And we'd get like 600-700 teenagers together and we'd learn about the Bible and we'd do wagon wheels and we'd have music and we'd dance and we had, you know, super dances and all this stuff. And so I did that a lot, throughout, my 9th, 10th and 11th grade and even my 12th grade. And we'd always have a song for every search weekend. I probably did about, I did enough of these where I actually almost became a priest. I was asked to become a priest when I was 17 years of age. Imagine how this world would have changed if Tony Curry had become a priest, man. And yeah, maybe life is cyclical. Maybe I can be a deacon or something. Anyway, one of the songs that they chose towards one of our last years was a song called Love is the Answer from England Dan and John Forcoli. And of course, you know, it one year it was Looking for Space from John Denver. I mean, these were sappy 70s love songs, but they had to pick a song that kind of fit the focus of the weekend. And so Love is the Answer. And I remember standing in circles, holding hands with kids I didn't know, singing the song, and it was just amazing. And so fast forward about 30 years later, and so I'm down at the BJCC Concert Hall, and I'm watching Ringo Starr's All-Star Band. He's got the lead singer from Mr. He's got some guy from Billy Joel's band, and then he's got Todd Rundgren. And, of course, Todd, I Saw the Light, Hello, It's Me, we got to get you a woman. And he breaks into Love is the Answer. And I had not realized that Todd Rundgren actually wrote that song for England Dan and John Forcoli. Now, he didn't sing it nearly as well as England Dan did. But I remember hearing it and I lost it. It just took me back to my high school days, to my Catholic youth organization and just how pure and how simple it was and how much fun it was. It was just a beautiful thing. And I still, every time I hear that song, no matter what kind of mood I'm in, it always brightens me up. It lifts me up. It's a beautiful, beautiful song. People probably wouldn't even give that song a listen to right now because they're like, wow, this is so corny. Back then, man, that was the real deal. If you really took the words to it and listened to it, it's a beautiful song. We don't have enough of it in this world of ours, but that's my fourth song. So those are those four songs.
Look how we shared our sensitive side.
I know, right? I mean, I felt like, and really, I didn't think I got to get a hard rocker. I got to get a soft song. I got to get a song about death. And you know, I got a couple of, there's another one, If You Could Read My Mind from Gordon Lightfoot, that was a song that I heard at my dad's funeral that really affected me. But I wanted to get four songs that were somewhat uplifting and stuff that people could listen to. So that's awesome. I'm going to allow you to pick our list for next week. So I want you to come up with an idea for next week. I'm going to put that on your plate because I love to get you, because you've come up with some great ideas. In between the sand, the beach volleyball and the baseball and the basketball and the football. Yeah, you got plenty of time. Hey, this is your escape, man. This is your escape. This is your chance to kind of go off to your happy place. Because I know how much you love this music as much as I do. Hey, Mark, I appreciate you. Check us out on the TKR app, Tony Curry Radio Podcast. Always one of our most listened to podcasts. I appreciate you, and I'll look forward to catching up with you next week.
All right, pal. Thanks so much.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.